You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
Now, Pastor Tom told me to behave now, so that means we're on the air. So here we're starting the program, and I am Joe Martech, just like you just heard. And this is called the Team Martech Hour, even though only one member of the team besides me is here, which is the standard team member, which is Vince Rosino, CPA.
Hello.
Now, I got to tell you an honest thing that happened today.
Okay. An honest thing
as opposed to a dishonest thing. You know how people say that? You know, and I've always said, gee, when they say, okay, I'm going to tell you the truth. Okay, that means you lie all the time.
Right. Now, this is the truth.
This is the truth. Yeah. Anyway, I had a person say, do you know a CPA? And I said, yeah. He says, does he do taxes?
Do you know a doctor? Does he practice medicine?
I mean, here comes the thing.
But, well, it could be a doctor
of
philosophy,
I guess. If you don't know. Now, you could be just a teacher.
That's true.
You could be a CPA that doesn't do taxes, doesn't do anything.
That
you
is
could
true.
Just be a teacher. Now, you have been.
I taught, but not at Columbia.
Not at Columbia. But I'm trying to say is I'm starting to look for an excuse for how I understood this thing. And I said, yeah. Well, anyway, this person says, well, my husband's thinking about starting a business. And I said, hey, the number one thing you need to do is have that person talk to a CPA before he starts business. And I happen to know one.
Wow. Who was that?
The guy's kind of Italian, you know. And Vincenzo Rosino.
From New York, by any chance?
From New York originally. I mean, what else can there be? But I had an interesting conversation. Folks, by the way, those of you that have not listened to this program, let me just tell you quickly. Joe Martech's a financial advisor, also called a securities principal, a stockbroker, and I've been doing this for many, 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 many years. We have been doing radio shows at least since 2004, and maybe before that. We don't really remember because we're getting old. But we know it's been since the hurricanes Francis and Jean, so we use that as our official start. And the concept was very simple. When you're a financial advisor, a stockbroker, people trust you with their money, their investments, their retirement, and they may ask you questions that you don't know the answer to, meaning taxes. Well, it's very hard to manage money and be a good money manager and be a tax person at the same time. Even though some people attempt to do that, it's very difficult to wear more than one hat. So literally, when I started doing the radio shows and some years before that, I made alliances with what I consider credible other experts that were high on integrity, long in business, not young. And we put together a group of six local professionals that, in my humble opinion, are as good a people, a person, as we're going to find. And they've been in business 20 or 30 years, sometimes even longer. And they all live here, work here. Of course, I hope to die here, not necessarily soon. I'm not sure everybody else does. But on the other hand, that was the concept of the show. So Vince Rosino, CPA, is sitting here. So anybody that wants to talk about taxes or tax matters or repealing Dodd-Frank.
Yes.
Yes.
Repealing Dodd-Frank.
Which you probably don't ever. 90% of the people or 98% have not heard of those words. But those of us that are in business understands what somewhat government can do to us in the name of trying to protect us, and they end up costing us more money trying to protect us, and that Dodd-Frank is one of those things. Next member of the team, critical member, of course everybody's critical, but Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, became a very critical part because those who've lived in Florida for a long time might remember Hurricane Andrew that devastated South Florida and actually put about 13 insurance companies out of business. But coincidentally, if you're an admitted company, that means the state of Florida approved you to do business, the state becomes your partner, and they would pay the claims in case that company became insolvent, which they did. But that also created a monster void in Florida, and many companies became unwilling to write insurance. Some wanted to cancel people, some non-renewed people. It was a monster problem. So the independent agent doesn't work for one insurance company. He works for the client, and he will have 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 companies, or two or nine. Dan happens to be 37 years in business, and in my humble opinion, is the premier independent insurance agent on the Treasure Coast. Next person was an attorney. Now, I know you're going to scratch your head and say, why in the world would we want to have an attorney? Well, sometimes they are necessary. And the two things that were critical to me, when I meet a new prospect, suspect, or client, the words will or trust become important things to me to make sure that I'm doing my job, meaning counseling these people properly. And in order to do a will or trust, in my humble opinion, not forget the word humble, in my opinion, you should go to a competent attorney to do it. He doesn't have to be expensive, but Florida law, if you go to Home Depot, or I guess you can't do it, you got to go to some whatever called store and buy a packet and fill it out, and you might do it wrong and it may not be legal, and nobody's going to know that till you're dead. But you go to an attorney and you get it done properly and you're smart. Next member, Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart. Well, those of you that have lived in Florida for a while remember the debacle in real estate when all of a sudden the prices shot up and then all of a sudden shot down, and there were foreclosures and deed backs and short sales. Ms. Victoria Lloyd, she's Remax of Stewart. She happens to have impeccable credentials. She actually was written up as one of the top 100 agents in the world for Remax. I mean, she's hot stuff as far as I've known her since 1980. And nobody works harder. Nobody's more conscientious. She tells you she's going to call you. She will. When she talks to you and tells you something, it's not going to be her opinion. It's going to be fact. She does her homework. She knows what she's talking about. Mike Paulus, mortgage broker. Critical part. In fact, met with a client, suspect, prospect today, and it was cart and horse thing. You know how we talk about the first thing you should do is talk to a mortgage broker before you talk to the realtor.
Yeah, right. Pre-qualified, yeah.
Find out what you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
And they had talked in reverse, that he had the cart and the horse wrong. He talked to Victoria first, taught him what he wanted. So Victoria went. But in the meantime, she said, you need to talk to Mike. So Mike and I were there today talking to him. And Mike said, here's what you can afford based on what you're telling me. And the rest of it now, the cart and the horse are in the proper order. Now he knows what he can afford, what kind of mortgage he can get, how much he has to put down. And now this called, the next point is now the realtor, and let fill in the blanks.
Right.
So then Mike Paulus, the mortgage broker, Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, Vince Rosino, CPA, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, Greg Fasula, attorney, and Joe Martek, financial advisor. Which leads me to a brand new subject.
What's that, Joe?
You'll like this one. So this hasn't happened often, but a few times over the years, I have either bumped into somebody or met somebody that was sold a investment that they were not qualified to own, or they were lied to, misrepresented.
So it was one of those not suitable investments?
Not suitable. Now, Vince knows where I'm going with this, mm-hmm. because in my business, with my licensing, there are fiduciary responsibilities. And one of the big ones is you don't ever put a person into an investment that they don't qualify for.
Right.
So suitability becomes one of the magic words. Well, this particular investor, who I happen to have known for many years, he is an intelligent person. He's an extremely successful person. He's not young, but he's not out to lunch. He's got his marbles. And he was sold something, and he was complaining to me about it. And I said, you were lied to. And he goes, you think? And I said, yeah, you can get your money back. I can help you do that. And he says, oh, you cannot. And I said, yes, you can. Because you go back to the office that sold you that. Forget the agent. forget that rep. You go straight to the manager that manages that office. Or if you have to go higher, you go to the broker-dealer directly. Broker-dealer folks is like Merrill Lynch, Dean Witter, Smith Barney. Mine happens to be called Centaurus Financial. There's 650, give or take, broker-dealers in America. All of them come under the same rules, one after the other, and the rules are very stiff, very, very, very clearly defined. And the big one that needs to be, you don't lie to people. And if you lie to people, and that piece of business got approved, and then the client now owns that stock or whatever it might be, and then they find out later on that it was lied to, there's liability on the hands, in the hands of the broker-dealer, because the broker-dealer is supposed to oversee the agents, the representatives, and make sure they do things that are proper. Now, of course, it's hard for them to tell when they lied, but the bottom line is there's paperwork that had to be signed by this client, and that client has to attest to the fact that they knew what they were doing. So I had told him, I said, hey, you can get your money back. So first, what he was told that he got was not what he got. That made it more exciting. So then he found out what he got, and he called me up, and they told him what he got, and he says, that isn't what I was told. And I said, now, use the word lied. Don't use the word mistake. Because when somebody tells you a lie, I don't care how much you want to put dust and fairy dust around it, it's still a lie. So he called me up today and says, Joe, they're giving me my money back. And I said, I told you. And I said, you know, now there was more to this conversation because I picked on him unmercifully because, you know, he's never done any business with me.
Well, you won't lie to them, Joe.
No, but now he's going to because I made him feel guilty. But he doesn't want to pay me, of course, which is what else is new in life. You understand
so
that?
So you want free?
Of course, or close to free.
Free is good.
I know, but I said...
but nobody can live
Doug,
on free.
Doug, I said, forget it. You're going to pay me. You wouldn't have got that $60,000 back if it wasn't for me. Anyway, so I picked on him pretty hard. But
are you getting his money?
Well, not yet, but yes. I mean, let me tell you, I am not letting go of his jowls for a good while because the fact that he called me back to tell me what I did for him meant he knew he was going to do business with me, but he wants to negotiate no matter what. He's one of those, you know, Vince?
Okay, I got it.
You know, which I understand. I mean, it isn't necessarily that I like it, but I respect a person that's a negotiator. You know, Italian, the negotiator. Can you believe that?
Nah.
Yeah, I didn't think
never.
So.
Never.
Anyway,
they have a unique way of negotiating.
Isn't that the truth? Anyway, another one of those Freudian slips. Isn't that the truth, right? As opposed to, isn't that a lie?
Isn't that a lie?
Yeah. So anyway, it's something that you need to file away, folks. If you've ever been, quote, misrepresented by a securities representative. Now, I'm not talking an insurance agent. I'm talking somebody that is a licensed securities representative called a stockbroker, financial advisor, that has...
they're licensed. Key is they're licensed.
They got to be licensed 6, 7, 24, multiple numbers. But at the bottom of their business card, normally it would have the name of a broker-dealer. So mine would say securities offered through Centaurus Financial, or they could say Merrill Lynch, or could say Dunn. I mean, whatever the name is, there is a responsibility that that organization has to make sure that you are into an appropriate investment. So if you were lied to, and I don't care if it was 5 years ago, there's no really clock on this. And normally,
well, how do you prove that, Joe?
Well, one of the things that happens, most broker-dealers, when a person gets very excited and they find out that they've been lied to and they find out that they have ways to go, there's attorneys out there, you know, that just specialize in doing
right,
this.
Right.
But literally, if you are vociferous enough in explaining what you were told and that company looks at it and says, there's no way that that's what you were told, and then they also very often have a representative that's no longer with them that they may have fired because normally that kind of person has more than one complaint.
Uh-huh.
So there's a pattern. And in the last two instances where I've helped people, that rep had been fired.
Oh. So that's
kind
good
of
evidence
yeah,
there. Yeah,
huh? That's evidentiary when the broker-dealer is saying, hey, this person's lied to other people, so we assume you're not the only one. No, they're not going to call you up and ask you if you've been lied to. They're going to wait for you to come to them. So if and anybody that might have a problem or has had a problem, I'm glad to give you some direction and help you move in the right direction. I literally sat in a house with a client, and in 15 minutes, maybe less, I settled. They got them settled over the phone, and they gave them money. And it was called, we don't want aggravation. We don't want this complaint to get in front of the SEC, in front of FINRA. We want to make sure that we don't need complaints. They don't want them. Because they can lose their licenses. They can lose their ability to do business.
So for them, it's just another cost of doing business.
It's another cost of doing business. And as I said, normally, if a person had one complaint only in 20 years, the odds are not too good. But if they had all of a sudden five or six
complaints, it
can be a problem.
But you have to prove it, though. How do you prove
not
that somebody lied to you?
Well,
you've got to have almost a tape recording or a letter or something.
No.
Or maybe the rep's notes, because, you know, I was a rep at one time. We used to have to fill out a questionnaire.
What happened is you fill out the form, and you go, but you have to show suitability for it.
Yeah.
But when it comes up and somebody is told something that is obviously not true, there is a determination that has to be made by management on the other end. But my personal experiences have been, not many, but a few. Each time this person was lied to, because they told me they were, and I had nothing to do with it, I wasn't involved in it, I just said, hey, you can get your money back, but you just can't be nice about it. You've got to make a big deal out of it.
Well, the interesting thing is, I don't know how it gets by, to tell you the truth, in the first place, because I remember when I was doing the paperwork, you'd have to submit it to the compliance.
Exactly.
And they would actually look at it and say, okay, this one has X dollars of net worth.
And they would sign off on it.
And they sign off on it. But so to get it even by a trade is
the point is, though, what often is the paperwork that you need to get things to get by is not always filled out properly.
I got you. So maybe it was falsified or something that.
I guess that was a word
I was trained
to use. You know, and there's all kinds of things that happen. You know, here's what, when a person's a crook, they're a crook. I don't care how you cut it.
True. You know,
there's ways to get around everything, and I don't care what it is.
He must have had a lot of volume, though, Joe. Think about it. One transaction for $60,000. He's not making a big commission to jeopardize his license.
But he must have made quite a few.
Yeah, he would have had to made quite a few.
And when you get multiple complaints and you get yanked your license because multiple complaints, the broker-dealer knows this person wasn't honest. So they just want, the truth is they don't want
problems. Don't want the publicity. They don't want to take the legal action because they got to hire lawyers then.
Look at the big houses that have been busted. And for years and years and years, there were settlements out of court, and they were non-disclosed settlements. Well, FINRA, these last few years, has said, we're not going to do any non-disclosed. We're going to disclose that there was fraud. There was wrong things.
So this is sort of transparency at its best. Huh?
And literally, that's what's happened. The consumer, in spite of the fact that some consumer protections have come back to haunt people and cost the consumer more money, this particular one does not. This particular one, compliance people in my business really are tough, and this is the right thing to do. I mean, I saw a young man right here in this town, certified financial planner, which is a hard license to get, hard to pass, stole over $1 million from a client. And they loved him, these people did, and they basically would have left it to him when they died anyway.
Oh,
but he got greedy.
That's sad.
Well, they got all the money back. He lost his licenses, and I think he went to jail. But the broker-dealer had to make the money good again.
So it cost the broker-dealer $1 million.
Yeah. I mean, so what I'm trying to say, folks, is now understand this. When you're dealing with a licensed securities representative, look on the bottom of the card, the business card, and if it says the name of a broker-dealer, Merrill Lynch, Dean Witter, Smith, Barney, Centaurus is mine, pick any number. There's lots and lots of different names. And it'll say member SIPC, which is Securities Insurance Protection Corporation, and FINRA, which is Anyway, they changed the name a few years ago, and I never can remember what it stands for. But it's something
financial
to do.
Financial Industry Regulatory.
Regulatory agency.
Agency.
National or whatever. Yeah,
right.
The bottom line is, that means there's extreme
There's governance and oversight, yes. Yeah.
And it's important. So it's a subject we rarely talk about. In fact, I've never have.
You know, the thing is, Joe, license is only the first line of defense. Somebody's license that tells you they passed a lot of tests and all that. Getting to the character integrity of somebody, there are plenty of people who have licenses that, you know, you wouldn't want to deal with. And unfortunately, sometimes you find out too late, and that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You found it too late. They lied to you. They made a representation. It was false. And then you trusted them, and you put the money there.
Well, I've heard people come up and say, well, you know, you deal with a registered investment advisor because we are special. And then, you know, we are held to a higher standard. And ask Bernie Madoff. He was one of those.
Yes.
He's sitting in jail for the rest of his life.
Well, I'm saying his license is great, and you need to deal with somebody licensed, but it doesn't guarantee
integrity.
No.
So, literally, the only reason we do these, not the only reason we do these shows, but one of the big things is this, is to try to educate you, our listeners, on some of the finer points of what it takes to make decisions that are proper. And, you know, when I what we take for granted because we do it every day, and it's sad sometimes that we do. We need to not take anything for granted because nobody knows anything until they're taught.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how many times, Vince, and I know this happens to you all the time. I get clients regularly that say, "Joe, tell me what you told me 6 months ago that I forgot." Hey, they trust you. This is all there is to it, and they're gonna. It's difficult. Mm-hmm. I remember vividly when I first got securities license and I had to learn what a mutual fund was.
Mm-hmm.
I had a hard time getting it in my head. You know how simple it is?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not when you don't know it. You've got to learn it first.
That's true.
Once you learn it, it's easy.
That's true.
So
it's true of anything, even in taxes.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to somebody today about the difference between my debt instruments.
Yes.
Which are not common stock.
Right.
And a high dividend paying stock.
You had to explain the difference.
Well,
that's part of your job.
So he said, "What's the par value?" And I said, "There is no par value on common stock." Okay. He said, "Well, then I want nothing to do with it." Okay, fine. Point is,
that's a legal distinction anyway, Joe. You could have par value on common stock. In fact, most publicly traded companies do have a par value. Usually it's a penny or a nickel or something. It's usually regulated by state law.
But what happens is, par value on some things means that's what it's going to be worth when you cash it in.
No, that's the face value of the stock. That's all it is.
But on debt instruments, par value is
that's
what
a different animal.
It's a different animal.
It's different with a debt instrument.
So a stock means I own the company. And that company goes bust. First one to get paid are the attorneys. That's true. Second ones to get paid are the debt holders.
Yeah, the secured debt holders.
Secured debt are next, then the non-secured debt. The last ones to get paid are the shareholders.
Yeah,
the shareholders.
Because you take the risk. The presumption is that you get the rewards, too, because you get dividends.
Presumption.
And that's the presumption.
Assumption. Right. Yeah. But the key is this. So, yes, can stock be good? No doubt about it. Can stock be bad? No doubt about it. Which led me to another subject when I was talking to, and that's calling putting in a stop loss.
Ah, yes, stop loss. Explain that to our audience.
Isn't that a wonderful subject?
It is.
So let's just use an example. We buy a share of stock in XYZ company for $10 a share.
Okay.
Stock goes up, we're happy. Stock goes down, we're not happy.
Right.
So you say, "Joe, I don't want to lose money." I said, "Okay, fine. We can put a stop loss in here, and when it goes down to that number, it'll sell automatically." So you pick the number, okay? If I buy it for 10, I want a $9.99 stop loss. I said, "I'm not going to do that because that can happen in 1 minute. It can go up a dime. It can go up a penny. It can go down a nickel, up a nickel." Put in a realistic number. Usually we use 10%. Now, if you're not willing to take a 10% risk, don't get into stock.
So it's not that they don't lose money. You're just saying what you're willing to accept.
What you're willing to accept
before
you get rid of it.
Yeah, so the 10% would be, I'm willing to take a 10% loss.
Exactly.
But no more.
No more.
So once it reaches that loss of 10% or 90% of the value you bought it for,
it's done. I want it sold, get me out.
Well, if you can do it the other way too, can't you?
Now you can do what's called a not stop loss. We can put in a limit.
Right.
My gain.
Now, right.
You've got to use separate words, right?
Right.
Like this really makes sense. Stop my gain, stop my loss. We could have used the same words, but no, that's against the rules. We got to use different words. So now it comes up, and let's just say you buy this stock for $10, and it goes to $50.
Right.
Means you just 500% gain. You just five times your money. That means right. You put in $100,000, you now have $500,000. Are you a happy camper? Of course you are.
You're ecstatic.
But very often when things go up dramatically, sometimes they come right back down dramatically. So very often I'll say to certain things that I expect or have a potential for taking off and making a lot of money, we put in what's called a limit, that it would automatically sell when it hits that number. Now, people like the idea, but I've had people, when things started to take off, would call me up and say, "Hey, Joe, remember that limit we put in there? Let it go." Because they think it's going to keep right on going.
Well, you could change that limit, too.
Oh, you can change every day. I mean,
if it's going like this, you could say, okay, pump it up another $10 a share, another $20,
yeah,
and get me out at $50 now instead of $30.
You can do any number you want, and you can change those every day. You know, up or down makes no big difference. That's one of the concepts of protecting yourself when it comes to pure stock. Protect me on the downside and
limit me on the upside. Why? Because it's part of a long-term strategy.
Yeah.
This is a strategy, is it not? These limits and stop losses?
Well, it also depends on the individual. Like I was talking to a young person today, and it really upsets me, in her 50s, same age as my daughter. Anyway.
Why does that upset you?
Because I'm old. Anyway. And I said she wants to save money in a Roth IRA long-term for grandkids. But she's not interested in a 5 or 6%. She'd say, isn't there something that maybe I got a better chance to make more money because I'm not going to put that much money aside, so I'd rather take more risk. And I said, okay, you can, because there are things you can do, but you're going to take more risk. Do you pay attention to these things? Yeah, but what I want to do is put in a stop, so in case I'm asleep and it hits that number, you're not going to be mad at me. So we protect it on the downside. Maybe not on the upside, but protect it on the downside.
Okay.
So there's all kinds of strategies, but what you need to do when you talk to somebody like me, one, my job is to teach. Your job is to learn. If you can't get it through your head what I'm talking about, we don't want to do it, because you need to know what you're talking about. You, even though you're going to forget it, you need to understand it to a limit, to a certain degree, so you know if there's risk. Because what I don't want you to do is to come back to me 6 months or a year later and say, "Joe, you never told me."
To quote a retailer up in New York, you remember Cy Sims?
Yeah, boy.
You remember him?
Yeah, big name.
He had a big retail operation in the New York area, and his line was, his slogan, "An educated consumer is my best customer." Well, it's the same here. I mean, the more educated you get your consumers, your customers, your clients.
Same thing.
I mean, the better they are, because then they understand that risk.
There you go.
And they're willing to take it or not, but you know up front.
Well, this is just like when I was talking to this person today about her husband starting a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, the first thing you need to do is talk to a CPA. And I happen to know one personally, because there's many, many different ways to start a business. And different businesses would have different structures depending on
depends
that
kind. Depends on and who you're getting involved. There's so many different variations on these structures.
Yeah.
And not everyone fits everybody. So you need to talk about it. If there are partners, no partners, are you by yourself? What's your strategy? Do you expect to have losses in the early years? I mean, there's all kinds of questions you'd ask that would go into the mix as to decide which is suited for you. Same suitability question that you have.
Basically.
Well, what's suitable? You know why that's a suitability question? Because if you give them the wrong advice, you lose them. You can get sued.
Well, the other side of the coin is, too, certain companies offer certain benefits because of the way they're structured. Some do not because of the way they're structured. Mm-hmm. Some businesses, when you sell them or dissolve them, you could have a monster tax problem and still lose money. Mm-hmm. So you depends on the structure. So you have to be careful on how you structure things. And again, certain businesses are more tendencies to go one direction or another. How do you know? You have to deal with somebody that knows what they're talking about. And there's where somebody that has the credentials. I got a buddy of mine that he says, "You know, Joe, I'm a CPA." And I said, "Really?" He says, "Yeah. My dad owned a cleaner, so I was cleaning, pressing, and alterations."
Oh. Well, that's a nice way. At least you're not a certified pain.
I know. It was cute. It was cute, though. 1-888. Hey, now listen, team, students, listeners, your job is to write this phone number down and to keep it handy so that when we're on the radio on Wednesdays, you can call us and ask questions. And if we If you don't want to talk to us on the radio, you can call and leave your name and number, and we'll call you back. Pastor Tom or the new young lady in there, whose name I forget, which I've got to learn because I should.
You should. Need it.
You know her name?
No, I don't.
Well, a lot of good you are. 1-888-221-8990. 1-888-221-8990. And that's a toll-free number any place and every place. 1-888-221-8990. I'm repeating this, folks, because you're supposed to have a pen and paper by now, and you're going to write this down.
Except for if they're driving.
Don't do it if you're driving. What you might do, you can also bring us up on the computer, WCNO.com. And on that, there will be sites that will give the phone numbers and give all kinds of stuff. That's kind of easier to remember if you've got a computer. Well, most everybody does. Even now, you don't even need a computer. You have a phone, which is a computer.
That's all it is. Really, it's a computer that you can talk on.
Yeah. WCNO.com or 888-221-8990. All right,
man. Well, you know, I had a call today, Joe, and this is the truth because I don't lie.
And?
I got a call about Social Security.
Scary.
A longtime client of mine. He's been a client for a good 20 years.
Wow.
He says, Vin, you know, I was over at a relative's house over the weekend, and I'm 63 years old, and they don't understand why I didn't take Social Security early.
Ooh.
He says, and they're telling me that I'm crazy because it only costs you 3%. I said, where'd they get these numbers from? So I explained to him that, A, he's working, he owns a business, so he's getting a salary, and that there are, at an early age, you're limited as to what you can earn.
Is it 15,000? 15,000
and change.
500?
15,300 or 15,500.
Yeah.
You're limited to what you can earn, and if you earn above those limits, then you start to get your benefit taken back. $2, every $2 of earnings over the number, 15, $1 comes back.
So let's say you're making $50,000 a year and you're taking $1,000 a month. You're going to give back that whole $12,000 that you just got paid.
Exactly.
And you're now stuck with that benefit.
Right, for the rest of your day.
Yeah.
So I say to him, so he says, really? Yeah. I says, and yeah, and 3%, Joe. I don't know. His name wasn't Joe. His name was Carl. So Carl, it's not 3%. If you take it at 62 and your normal retirement is 66, that discount is more like 25%.
8% a year, isn't it?
No, that's on the other side. It's if you defer your benefit, you gain 8% a year after 66 or whatever your normal retirement age is. But in this case, an early benefit is cut by roughly 25% off your normal benefit.
Wow!
So if you say your normal benefit would be $2,400 a month,
right,
let's say, well, take 25% of that off.
Yeah, yeah.
And what do you got? You got $1,800. It's a big difference. And be careful with that, and do your homework before you decide to make an early.
One of the things that, and remember that phone number, folks, 888-221-8990. If you have questions ever about Social Security, because you're allowed to forget this as we're teaching, and if you have a friend or relative, a neighbor that has these questions, we're here to help you no matter what, and we don't charge you anything for a phone call. You call us up, we'd be glad to help you. In fact, which reminds me of a caller we had last week whose mother wanted a deed a house tour.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah, and this was an interesting thing, and 90% or maybe 99% of the people in the world don't have a clue about the tax ramifications on somebody deeding a piece of property to one of their children. And that's
right.
Normally what happens is parents doing a good thing, they're going to deed the house to their daughter or their son. What they don't realize are the tax implications.
Right. And there are tax implications, if not absolutely up front, but maybe down the road. For example, if you gift property or anything, gift anything.
Well, let's say it's $100,000 house.
$100,000 house, so you're gifting it.
Right.
Well, on a gift in excess of the, let's say, your annual exclusion. Right now, your annual exclusion is about 14.5.
But if it's over $5 million in the state, it's not important.
And if you're over $5 million, it's not important.
Yeah.
But here's the more important thing.
Here we go.
If it's $100,000, you still have to report it, and the basis, your cost, carries over to the person that you are gifting it to. So if it's, let's say you paid $20,000 for the house 35 years ago, and you put $50,000 into it, so now you got a $70,000 cost. Well, guess what? That cost goes over to the person you give it to, so that now the their gain on ultimate disposition is based on that $70,000 of cost. So if they sell it that down the road for $500,000, then they got a $430,000 gain. So
slow down on this, and let's do this again, word for word. Here comes the problem. When a parent gifts a house to a child, and let's just make easy math, they bought it for $50,000 and now it's worth $200,000.
Right.
And they sell it for $200,000. Forget about how much the cash they put into it. Let's assume it's got $50,000 total. There's $150,000 worth of gain, and that's going to be a taxable consequence when that child sells the house.
When the child sells the house, yes, it will, because on a gift during a lifetime, i.e. when you're alive and you give somebody something, they don't get what's called a step-up, John. No. You know what a step-up is? You know what it is, but the audience probably doesn't. A step-up is if you gain property by virtue of a death, an inheritance.
Here comes the... Now, this is important.
Yeah, it's very important.
Repeat this.
If you get, if that same parent during her lifetime gifted to the child this house, she has a gift tax implication, which if you have an under a $5 million estate, it really doesn't matter. But the value, the cost, the tax basis carries over from the mother to the child. So if you paid $70,000 for this house, well, then that's what the child gets as a basis, $70,000.
And they sell it for $500,000?
They sell it for $500,000. The basis is $70,000. They got a gain of $430,000.
Pay tax on.
Pay tax on, technically, unless it's there. There's other complications.
But
if they live in it, it's a personal residence. It's,
but makes no difference. There's still going to be
a gain. $430,000.
How do you avoid that?
Well, if they did a little bit of planning, put the house in a trust, and then upon the death of the mom, in this case, if she's the only one alive, at the date of death or 6 months after, whichever is more beneficial, they could step it up to fair value at that time. What does that mean? That means the value of the house, the increase in the value, in this case, it went from 70 to 500.
Right.
Let's say it was 500 on date of death.
On date of death.
Well, then that becomes the stepped up cost basis that passes
that
to the heirs.
That means they sell it for $500,000. There is no tax.
There's no tax because there's no gain.
See, so literally, this is critical that people learn not to have mom do this. Let's go down to a lawyer and spend $1,000 or $1,200 and do a trust. Put the house in the trust, define exactly what will happen, that the child can use it, live in it, do whatever. But in the meantime, it stays basically in mom's name until mom dies. The day mom dies, it's the kid's house, and they avoided paying tax on $400,000 conceivably. So
conceivably, yeah.
It's a very, very important lesson for people to understand, which leads me into another one, and that's people putting their child on their bank accounts.
Yes.
So let's say I have a bank account and it's in my name and I've got $100,000 in that bank account because I'm one lucky guy. But because I'm worried about dropping dead any day, I put my child as a co-owner of that bank account. And that child gets sued and that child loses. That bank account of mine is gone. Because that's a co-owner, and they, far as the courts are concerned, that's their money.
It's co-owner, and you're not a spouse. See, there's a distinction there, too. If it's a spouse who co-owns with you...
Different story. But let's talk strictly about, oftentimes, we put
Where it's a child and a mother,
right?
It becomes a joint ownership situation.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's exposed.
You know, I had a client of mine that had a son up north that was a cop. And I just said, man, you got to be crazy to put that kid on your bank account because cops, they can get sued regularly because of all of the stuff that's going on. Anybody that's in especially a high risk type of thing from a lawsuit standpoint, let's say you own a business and you're a manufacturer and all of a sudden somebody gets hurt at your company and you can get sued for millions of dollars. And attorneys love people that have deep pockets and they're looking for deep pockets. So any kind of money that goes. Now, there's exceptions. Let's take retirement accounts.
Right.
If you have an IRA, 401k, 457, 403, a retirement account that was set up as a retirement account, those are exempt from attachment by creditors. Exempt,
right.
Meaning you get sued, they can't take it away from you.
Except the IRS, although
IRS doesn't care about that. So skip the IRS for a minute, but let's just talk getting a lawsuit. Now, you put not a partner on those, you put a beneficiary.
Right. And just stop right there, Joe, because on the beneficiary, it's very important for the audience to know that they should be examining their beneficiaries on all these accounts. Because yep. You'd be surprised how many people set these things up and they don't designate a beneficiary.
Isn't that sad? Now, you know whose fault that is as far as I'm concerned?
It should be the bank or whomever you put it through.
Whatever the agent is that helped you set this up, they should have made it a big deal about making sure you put a beneficiary. And I've had people say, well, Joe, I don't care. And I says, okay, you drop dead right this minute. Who gets the money? Right now.
Yeah.
You can change your mind next week, next month, and next year. You can change beneficiaries as often as you want. But the reality is this. How many times have we seen somebody has like a life insurance contract and they name a beneficiary and it's his wife who now is his ex-wife. And his new wife, 25 years married, says, oh, he left $1 million life insurance. Oh, what? I don't get it.
Right.
His ex-wife gets it.
His ex-wife. It might have been part of the marriage settlement when they got divorced.
And never know.
Happened. You don't know. So you need to pay attention to those beneficiaries. Oh, it's very, very important. I had a case where I had a client that exactly that happened. There was no beneficiary. And you know what happened? The bank wouldn't release the money. It took like that going through probate.
You got to go through the court.
And it went through the court to get permission. And then the money goes into the estate, which defies or defeats the purpose.
I know.
The money goes into the estate now.
Now it becomes subject to taxes that it wasn't.
Exactly.
The whole concept of doing this thing properly is critical. I had a real circumstance. I don't know if I ever told you about this one. I took care of an old lady for 10 years. I mean, she became a member of the family, and she died. And the family she had, I guess the nicest thing I can say about them was they're not very nice people.
That's the nicest thing you can say?
That's the nicest thing.
Yeah.
Okay. These are very mercenary people.
Wow.
And this lady left life insurance, and her husband had no children, so the beneficiaries were each other. Well, he had died before her. And I did not know about this life insurance contract. Well, I could have put beneficiaries on and changed it in a heartbeat. Well, because there was no beneficiary alive, it now basically went to her estate, which had to go to a blood relative.
Right.
And the blood relative happened to be a sister that never talked to her, but that's who got the money.
And if there are two blood relatives, it's per stirpes, right? They get it equally?
They could go down, yeah. So the key was this. These things are not hard to do, but they're a pain because it takes some effort and you got to pull out the paperwork, you got to find it. What you do, folks, anytime you have this situation, you just call us and we'll help you over the phone on what to do. We can oftentimes even do the paperwork for you. It's not hard for us because we do it every day. I said we do it. I give it to my girl Nikki in the office.
You heard that, Nikki?
You heard that, Nikki? But the point is, these are mechanical things that we can do for people, and we don't charge for doing stuff like this. We know we're phone calls
and advice
like that.
We're gonna
help you.
But here's the other thing, Joe, and I recommend this is all tied and all part of the same deal. Is make sure that you have a record somewhere in your safe, which lists all of these assets, including the life insurance, what you have, so that somebody later, after you die or your kids, go to this thing and that's it. All your assets are listed there.
Got it.
Kids can't find it, and then you've got to wait, and maybe it gets unclaimed because nobody knows about it.
Now, you know, a lot of people are secret.
Yes, I get that.
And it's kind
of secret. All right, keep it secret. Put it in a safe. But you know what? Tell your children.
Make sure somebody knows the combination.
Exactly.
I have a funny thing that I've done with clients because I know them intimately and I know what their assets are. And I said, you take my business card and put it on your file box and put down a note attached to my business card. I'm dead. Call Joe.
Well, I had a new client come in to meet with me the other day, and she's a she's a widowed woman, and she says, well, I got everything taken care of, I got the will, and I got life insurance, and I got that. I said, well, she has no children.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, who's going to take over the power of attorney when you're gone? She said, well, I have a trust company. I said, okay, well, how does a trust company going to know you're dead? Are they going to look in the newspaper and watch for an old bit
right.
and figure out that you're dead and they have to do something? Somebody's got to know
yeah.
to tell them.
Yeah.
So you can't keep everything secret. Maybe you got to have a friend or a close relative or somebody say, hey, look, if I
know.
Die, yeah. call this person.
And that's why, and I kind of laugh, but I mean it. And I tell you what, I have had it happen on quite a few occasions where I would get a phone call. Joe, my dad died yesterday, and I got a note that says I'm supposed to call you. I said, really? Yeah. And then I said, okay, well, I can settle your estate for you in about 5 minutes because I know your dad. I know exactly what he had, and this is what he's got, and this is what you do. Because they didn't have a clue. Because unless you go through this stuff, I mean, how do you learn it?
Right.
So, but because we go through it regularly, it's not that we're happy about going through it, but the bottom line is this is not a hard thing for us that because we know what to do.
Well, sometimes you'll learn these things by accident, Joe.
Yeah.
I had a woman. She's still my client. She happens to live in Ireland. She retired there. She's an American citizen, but she retired over there. And we're talking one day because you know that the feds came up with a new reporting requirement now for those people that have foreign bank accounts.
Uh-huh.
And if you have a bank account with more than $10,000 in it at any time during the year, you need to report
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
There's a FinCEN report, FinCEN 114, that you have to file. But anyway, so I was telling her about this because I knew she lived there. And I thought she only had one bank account in the U.S., which was a Chase Manhattan bank account or Chase J.P. Morgan.
Whatever,
now.
Right.
But it turns out she had about $350,000 overseas.
Wow, wow.
So I said, well, does anybody even know? Because she's also never been married. This
woman.
She's in her 80s.
Yeah.
And I know who the beneficiaries are because she told me.
Right.
They're all going to go to this person and that person. I said, well, do they even know? I don't know that they know.
How are they going to find out?
How are they going to find out?
Yeah.
So I sort of forced her to sit down and write these things down.
Yeah.
We had to report it anyway. So at this point, we give it to the niece. In this case, it was the niece who was getting the money.
Somebody,
or part of it. Somebody had to know.
Somebody has to know where these things are.
Yeah.
They don't need to know how much is in it, but
they need to know that there's an account there.
Yeah.
That's right.
And
there is
how do I find? Otherwise, it could be 6 months or a year or 6 years or 16 years.
Especially it's overseas now.
It's
in an Irish bank.
Yeah, and that's going to be, they're really looking for you bad in America.
So my point is sometimes you stumble on these things.
Yeah.
But as professionals, we need to ask.
1-888-221-8990. Now, I'm surprised that we're not waking anybody up with questions because these are subjects that we haven't talked about before that I remember anyway.
Yeah, it's been a while since we talked about foreign accounts, and the government is pretty hot on these now.
Boy, they're big time. They're looking for.
They're looking for money laundering. They're also just looking for people trying to avoid income taxation.
Yeah,
they put the money over there, either from legal or illegal gains.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they don't pay the interest. I mean, the tax on the interest or other things.
Point is that there's things that if you're doing things legally and properly and morally right. And you know, you might be doing things that are not legal. You need to know about it. And then you need to make a decision. Am I willing to take the risk or do I not want to take the risk and make it there? Because these things just don't go away by themselves.
Oh, no. And what you want to be careful of, and I know a lot of this goes on, is when you've got transfers of monies from other countries to this country.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you've got that case where you've got somebody here on a green card or a visa, but they need money. It comes from home. It goes into a U.S. citizen's bank account, and they turn around and give it to the other person. I said, be very, very careful with those situations.
With all the situation going on with terrorism and money flowing, the government is really, really, and they should be. I mean, this is proper, just keeping track of it. In the meantime, we got a caller here. Let's take this caller. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hi. I really love this program.
Thank you.
You gave the phone number once to call, but I didn't get a chance to write it down. I have a question regarding will. If I were to need a will, do I talk to you about that also?
What happens is this, we are not attorneys, either one of us that are sitting here, but the answer is yes. What we would do is suggest that you call Gregory Fasula, who is an attorney with our group, and talk to him on the phone and ask your questions and then meet and get your will taken care of.
Okay. So do I get the number off the air or you can give me the number?
Did you already give us your number when you called in or no?
I think I did.
Here's what I'm going to do. Vince and I are both looking it up right now.
We're looking up now, see if I have him on my phone.
I've got it, and Vince has got it, but you just hang on 1 second, because not a lot of people are calling us, so we might as well just give you that number. And
okay. I'm going to get a pen.
That's even better. And I've got it.
Yeah, I've got it, too.
You ready?
No, I'm in the car. I just spoke to call you.
You're not driving, are you?
No. I stopped.
Okay, good.
Oh, good. We don't want you to get into an accident.
We don't
want to
hear. We don't want the wreck.
We don't want to hear any screeching of tires.
No screeching of tires, right?
No, I stopped the car so I can call you.
Okay.
Okay, what is the number to call, please?
772-337-0062.
Okay. 772-337-0062.
You got it.
And who do I ask for?
Gregory Fasula.
Okay. I will call him. Thank you so much. I really love this. I love the information.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it.
Call again, caller.
Yeah,
call us up.
Hey, we want you to call us up and tell us every week how good we are.
No problem. I'll tell you.
Thank you.
I wish you
well. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
1-888-221-8990. Not that we're fishing for compliments, but that's the hardest fish as I can make.
That's it, Joe. You did a pretty good job. You really put the worm on that.
Bill, call us with compliments.
Call us again and compliment us all the time.
All the time. 1-888-221-8990. And that's an important number that you should keep, because there are 6 different local professionals here. And I think we can handle lots of different stuff for lots of people.
No doubt.
And the truth is, I mean, I've got clients of mine, Vincent, and you probably do too. Whoop, here we go.
There you go.
Now we
get
a call. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio. Hello.
Oh, hi, Joe. Hi there. I am currently actually studying to take a licensing exam, and I heard you talking about it on the radio, so I figured I'd call in and thank you for your insight. I do believe that I recognize your voice, though. Am I correct? From a study training program?
From which program?
A study training program. Are you somehow affiliated?
No, but
I can't imagine Joe doing something like that.
Thank you so much for that compliment. But the answer is no.
No, that's not you.
No, that's not me.
Not
but,
me either.
But not Vince either. No, that was not it. You know, but we've been potty trained for years.
Okay. Well, anyways, I did have a question.
Go ahead.
Some of the questions that are mixing me up on my examination is about market and efficiency, and whether or not you can time or beat the market, and the different type of philosophies. Could you kind of speak on that and kind of speak about something that I think all your listeners would like to learn about, and what is and what isn't a good type of efficient market, and can you trade against it and win, since we're talking about limit orders and whatnot?
We will try to do that. We may not have time today, but I'll tell you what you might do is remember us and call back in next week at the beginning of the show so we can spend more time, because some of these things get a bit complicated. But that's a great, great subject, and I appreciate you bringing that up. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks again, Joe. Take care.
Bye. In spite of the fact I'm potty trained.
I think you got a couple more calls.
I like that. Whatever it was. But that's, you know, when we start talking about limit orders and stop orders, what he is becoming is a sophisticated investor. Not quite honestly, not everybody needs to be sophisticated. There's a lot of people that buy and hold for long periods of time. A lot of people don't want to be active traders. There's different types. There's many different boats, and different people can fit in these boats, and not all fit the same.
Exactly. There's different.
Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
I have a question regarding a will.
Go ahead.
Is it necessary to have a trust, or is a will sufficient enough to keep anything from going to probate?
Very good question. Here's one of the major things. The trust avoids probate, period. That's the whole concept of a trust. A will, right, does not necessarily avoid probate. However, certain assets do not necessarily need to be subject to probate if they are titled properly. Let's just take your homestead. Your homestead is not subject to probate. Let's take your bank account. If you go to the bank and you say, bank, put on a transfer on death agreement, TOD, and you name people that'll get the money, they just need to show a death certificate that you're dead and it doesn't have to go through probate. You can do that transfer on death agreement on stocks, bonds, mutual funds normally. Annuities have named beneficiaries. IRAs have named beneficiaries. Many things are not subject as long as they're titled properly. The key thing is which ones are titled properly. So your question is, if you talk to the right attorney, like Greg is one of these that would tell you flat out that you don't need a trust because your assets are not going to be subject to probate. And I very often counsel people to say, hey, let's don't do this, let's don't do that one, because if we do this agreement, we bypass the probate process. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your knowledge.
Thank you so much
for calling, caller.
Thank you. And we got 1 minute left, so what Pastor Tom, and you know, you went from 2 to 1 in less than a minute there. I was watching you flash those cards.
Well, that's his watch is a little off.
It's a specialty of yours. Yeah, are we really? We got.
We've got to turn the transmitter off at the tower. They're doing some work, so we've got to shut down.
You're getting rid of us early.
Well, about a minute early.
Okay.
All right. Wait, no problem.
Let me recalculate these dollars. And cents.
make your final comments round it up.
Hey, listen, folks, thank you so much for the calls and thank you for the compliments. And remember, we love compliments. So call us up and say, hey, we really appreciate what you're doing because we love doing what we're doing.
And just as important, ask us the questions, anything you might have out there that's a question to you, and we'll be happy to talk to you.
And Pastor Tom says we need to leave early today, so we're leaving early.
We got to maintain this transmitter.
Well,
or we
not
have
really.
A show
you've
week.
Got your full allotted time. Oh, because remember, we don't have the news anymore.
Well, yeah, but in my contract it says that I get extra time if you kick me out early.
Oh, I'll have to read that again.
Well, read that again.
God bless you all. Thank
you so much
for
calling.
Until next week. Martech program. The Team Martech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team Martech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team Martech is available at 772-678-7725.
Okay, friends, we want to let you know that in just a little bit, we're going to be losing our signal here on the Treasure Coast. There are folks out working on the tower this afternoon, and those fellas are climbing the tower. They'll be up and near our antenna, so we're going to have to shut down the transmitter for about 2 hours or so, I'm told. And so over the next 2 hours, we will not be on the air. We just wanted to pass that information along to you. But we do thank you for listening. We thank you for tuning in today to Team Martech with Joe and Vince. And, of course, we thank you for listening to WCNO every day. So in just a few moments, we'll be leaving the air, and hopefully we'll be back on the air later this evening before the programming begins. So have a good afternoon. Enjoy your day. And this is WCNO Palm City.